police, and protesters. Hello and welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. We discuss the week that was and dig behind the news and newsmakers making headlines. Demonstrators march in South Florida against police-related violence. They plan new protests as a street artist dies in a chase with police. He was hit by an unmarked Miami squad car. What role do prosecutors play in these police-related deaths? How do investigators gauge police behavior? A state prosecutor will join us. Florida's prison system gets a new boss who does not have experience with prisons. The department is under pressure thanks to inmate deaths and prisoner abuse. What does she have to do to clean up the corrections department? And the worsening political crisis in Haiti. It's all ahead on the Florida Roundup, next on WLRN. Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
Shut it down! Shut it down!
This was the sound 1 week ago on the streets of Wynwood in Miami. The demonstration against police violence gathered protesters, and they marched up ramps to Interstate 195 and blocked traffic for a time. They were carrying signs reading Black Lives Matter, demonstrating against separate grand jury decisions to not indict police officers involved in the deaths of Eric Garner in Staten Island, New York, and Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. They were also protesting the death almost 2 years ago of Israel Hernandez Yach. He was also known as Rifa, a graffiti artist. He was spray painting an abandoned McDonald's on Miami Beach when police gave chase. He was caught and tasered, dying from sudden cardiac arrest from the electric shock. The Miami-Dade medical examiner ruled the death an accident. In the early hours of this past Friday morning, 21-year-old Delbert Rodriguez was in the streets of Wynwood. He's known as Dems among graffiti street artists. According to Miami police, an undercover officer spotted him tagging a building. An unmarked squad car, a silver Chevy sedan, approached. Dems ran. As the officer gave chase in the car, he turned a corner. Dems came out between two parked cars, and the unmarked squad car hit him. He suffered a brain injury and died this week on Tuesday. The death has focused scrutiny again on police behavior and police tactics. The union representing Miami police officers released a statement this week that said, quote, "It is unfortunate that this young man lost his life due to his poor decision to run from the police," end quote. What do you make of this scrutiny of police behavior, police strategy, and police tactics? Do you have experience as a police officer? Maybe you're currently patrolling the streets of South Florida. Let us know. Do you have an experience with a police officer? Let us know by joining the Florida Roundup on the telephone at 1-800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN, online at WLRN.org, or on Twitter using the call sign at WLRN. Don Horn is a chief assistant state attorney in Miami-Dade County, and also joining us from the Miami Herald newsroom in Doral is Chuck Rabin, longtime crime reporter for the Herald. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you here on the Florida Roundup. Don, let's start with the role of the state attorney's office. What does it play in these kinds of cases?
Well, we play the same role that we do with any other type of crime or potential crime that's occurred in Miami-Dade County, Florida. We look at the evidence, we evaluate the evidence, and we make a determination, one, if there's been a crime committed, and if so, do we have the person who's committed the crime, and if there is sufficient evidence, we then make a charging decision and file charges, whether that be a civilian or police officer.
So the process doesn't matter if a police officer is involved or if it is a tourist or a resident.
It depends on what the charge is. I got some information yesterday in advance of this, and by my count, over the last 10 years, there have been more than 150 law enforcement officers who have been arrested in Miami-Dade County, many of whom have been prosecuted by our office, and even one that was in the Herald several weeks ago, the Opa-locka police officer. Mm-hmm. So we do have a history of prosecuting police officers. When we get to the issue of police use of deadly force and situations where there are deceased persons, there's a whole different ball game that takes place because we conduct our investigation after the police conduct their investigation. We have to obtain all of their police reports. We get the lab reports, the medical examiner's reports, witness statements. And once we obtain all of that information, we then start our separate investigation to determine whether there was any criminal activity and whether criminal charges should be brought against the officer or officers.
Chuck Rabin, you've been covering crime in South Florida for a long, long time. When you hear Don Horn describe prosecuting police officers within the state attorney's office, what are your thoughts and what you've experienced through the years?
I think it's fairly accurate. There are several officers have been charged. It's very difficult. It's proven difficult, I think, for juries to find officers guilty. I haven't really covered the courts all that much, but I think Don will say that. And it's as far as, you know, difficulties of prosecuting officers for on-the-job crimes alleged. You can see the difficulties of that in New York and, I guess, in Missouri as well.
Yeah, certainly we did see those with the two cases in Staten Island and Ferguson. But, Don, back to how you treat and how the state prosecutor's office treats a fatality that involves a police officer. Are you saying you conduct your own investigation after the police, which is different than if it were two kind of domestic residents that were involved in a crime?
Absolutely. And the police do also. In a situation where someone commits a murder, they know who the person is, they go out, they make an arrest. We get information shortly after that and start processing paperwork. When there's police involved shooting, there's a whole different process involved with law enforcement and with us.
So critics will say there hasn't been a prosecution of a police-involved killing in Miami-Dade County in 25 years.
That's correct.
And so is that to say the process that you described works, and it works to a point that the prosecution does not feel that the cases merit going through the official judicial system, through the court system?
No, I don't think it's either. I think one of the realities that we are aware of is that the laws in our state, as well as the laws in probably every other state in this country, are written overwhelmingly in support of protecting police officers because of the dangerous job that they have. They have got the right, ability, power to use deadly force, and that comes with their job duties. They have the responsibility to protect us and keep us safe, and as part of that duty and responsibility, they come into contact with some bad folks. And as a part of that duty, the law gives them the ability, if the person you're trying to arrest is resisting you and is giving you force, you as the police officer have the lawful authority to use whatever reasonable force you believe is necessary to take that person into custody. On another note, similar to what has happened with the legislatures passing the Stand Your Ground, they're going in the opposite direction because now I have a lot of rights that the police officer has. I don't have to retreat anymore. The officer doesn't have to retreat. And the officer, if he or she feels that they are in danger of death or great bodily harm, can use deadly force to protect themselves or someone else. And so with those ground rules, you're evaluating police shooting use of deadly force different than a civilian, because a civilian doesn't have the right to make an arrest. A civilian doesn't have the right to overwhelm someone else's force if they're resisting them. In fact, if the officer is in the act of making an arrest, I, as a citizen, don't have the right to resist. And if I do, I've now committed a felony. And so it's a whole different ballgame.
Don Horn is Chief Assistant State Attorney in Miami-Dade County. Chuck Rabin, a longtime crime reporter with the Miami Herald, along with us. This is the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson. You can join the conversation, 800-743-9576, online at WLRNradio.org, or on Twitter using the handle at WLRN. Chuck, you have covered crime again for many, many years. How do you gauge police behavior and how it may have evolved over the past, say, quarter of a century locally?
I think David Ovalle wrote a story recently that Don's probably familiar with that sort of laid out why it's so difficult to prosecute police officers. Don's 100% right. They have a dangerous job and they have tremendous leeway in their ability to deal with the public. It's a tough thing, and it just, you know, I think it's something that's been going on for a long time, the way that officers deal with the public. I think with social media and with, you know, the 24-hour news cycle now, it's just something that people see a lot more often.
The case you refer to was a case 25 years ago. Don, you were a prosecutor on this case. It was the last trial of a Miami police officer involved in a fatal shooting that ended with a conviction. Officer William Lozano shot Clement Lloyd, who was speeding on his motorcycle with a passenger on the back, through the streets of Overtown.
We, the jury at Miami-Dade County, Florida, this 7th day of December, A.D., 1989, find the defendant, William Lozano, as to manslaughter, as charged in count one of the information, guilty with a firearm. So say we all, signed by foreman Ezra Simmons.
This was 25 years ago, the last time a jury convicted a Miami police officer in a fatal shooting. Of course, that conviction ultimately was overturned, because the Third District Court of Appeals, Don, found that prosecutors, your team, relied on internal police training that showed a ban on shooting at a moving vehicle. Officer Lozano shot at a moving motorcycle in this case, hitting and killing the driver, Lloyd, which led to injuries that ultimately killed the passenger on the back of the motorcycle. The conviction overturned, the training should not have been used as evidence, and this continues to be cited today. You referred to the laws in the state of Florida that make prosecuting a police difficult. This is one of those court rulings, correct?
That appellate court opinion probably single-handedly has had more to do with the number of police officers charged by our office.
The reduction down to zero.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And why is that? Why is training, the lack of being able to introduce police training as evidence in a fatal police shooting, why is that inability led to all but an elimination of prosecution of police-involved fatal incidents?
Or Don, maybe you can you explain, like, why, what the logic is behind not letting the training introduced as evidence?
Well, I'd like you to...
Because that's what confuses me.
Well, that's certainly a great question for the Third Court of District Appeals in 1991. But Don, respond to that. You understand the legal logic here. Put it in plain terms to a community.
I'm not sure that I ever understood the legal logic of that. What we argued in closing and what we brought out during the trial, myself and John Hogan, who I was trying the case with, we told the jurors, you've got a police officer here. And based on the actions that the witnesses say he performed on that day, he did not act as a reasonably prudent police officer. A reasonably prudent police officer does not step out from a position of safety and put himself in a position of harm and then use the position he's placed himself in to say, I'm in fear for my life and now I use deadly force. He had received special training with video training, shoot, don't shoot training on this specific issue. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying, you've been trained on this. You've been told mm-hmm. you can't do this. You shouldn't do this. This is not prudent. And he acted in an imprudent manner. And from our position, it's like he did not act reasonably in this situation. He is now responsible for the death of these two persons on the motorcycle, and you should find him guilty.
The Court of Appeals, however, found that evidence should not be have considered by the jury and overturned the conviction. So you know, is it that ruling that has led to the last 25 years in Miami-Dade County, in the state attorney's office, the last 12 years of which you've been back in the office, Don, no prosecution, no active prosecution of a police officer involved in a fatal incident?
Let me clarify. We've got a number of police shootings that are without question justifiable, legally justifiable mm-hmm. shootings. We had a situation here several years ago where police officers from Miami-Dade trying to execute warrants. Two police officers killed. The person who killed them was killed on the spot. There's no question that's a legally justified shooting. We've got police officers who respond to armed robberies in process, folks with weapons, folks shooting at police officers. They're killed. Those are not issues.
Right, right.
But oftentimes we have cases where the act that resulted in the death involved a police officer doing something that was against the officer's training, or that the officer's department said our officers shall not engage in this type of behavior, or they shall follow this policy and this procedure. The logic of the third DCA's opinion District Court of Appeals, yes, is the Florida statute is not going to be impacted by some police department's rules, policies, procedures, guidelines. The judge is going to instruct the jury, you have to follow the law. And the law is what the legislature has said,
right,
not what some police departments
so
put together.
Don, have you found yourself and your team of prosecutors, as you look at fatal police shootings and you investigate them, that you get to a point where you get to the Lozano ruling and it's off the table?
Yes.
No, you will not take an action.
Absolutely.
Despite the fact that you think you can make a case to a jury.
Absolutely.
But you would not.
Absolutely. We have had cases where that has been where we ended up. But for the Lozano opinion, we would have been able to go forward. Now, there are other cases where we have conducted our investigation and we found that we could not state that the shooting was legally justified. We have some situations where it's like, I know that's what the officer said. We don't believe the officer, but we can't prove what the officer said was incorrect. We don't have any evidence to the contrary. And so, again, we're stuck.
Don Horn, Chief Assistant State Attorney in Miami-Dade County. Chuck Rabin with the Miami Herald. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. We're going to go to Ray in Miami. Ray joins the program. Go ahead, sir.
I want to share an experience that happened to me at a college event. It was a tailgate. Essentially, a kid was getting beat up by a gang of people. We saw him in the distance as the kid approached us. He's falling over, bleeding. And I went up to help him. As I helped him, you know, I just helped him get up. He was about to fall. The gang apparently saw me, and they went to attack me. They started seeing some people with fists clenched walking up to me. I got into, you know, self-defense mode, started running for my life, and I peered the area. When I turned around, I saw a troop of people running after me. So I'm like, wow, this is serious. So I ran. I didn't know where to go. I saw a big light, ran under the light where everything was visible. If they were going to attack me, everybody would see these gang members in full light and be able to recognize them. I saw some cop cars in the distance. I mean, this is an excellent chance for the police to see these and take action. And I just got under the light, started screaming. The cops come up to me. What's happening? Hey guys, these are gang. They're here. Okay, they're attacked. I was frantic. The cops are like, okay, come with me for questioning. Of course, officer, I'll come with you for questioning. Put these handcuffs on. I turn around and, you know, I respect their families. I know they don't know me. I probably look very frantic. They put handcuffs on me. As they're walking me to the cars, the one officer asks the other, oh, you got this one or I got this one? And, yeah, I got it. Put me in the car. Didn't get any read any Miranda rights. They just booked me. And the gang members actually passed by the police car and knocked on the window.
Ray, yeah. What was the charge? What was the charge when they arrested you?
They ended up taking me to the jail. They ended up taking me to downtown. And they put disorderly intoxicated and disrupting the...
Were you? Were you drinking?
No, wasn't drinking at all. They went ahead and they published a police report that said...
Were you prosecuted, Ray?
How did it end, Ray?
Yeah. Were you prosecuted?
They didn't prosecute me. I had to miss school for 3 days on different occasions, just going to court saying, hey, I'm not guilty. And then they just dismissed it.
Ray, how has this affected your relationship with law enforcement, if at all?
You lose trust in them. But what really, really got me mad was that they reported it on a school newspaper, and they put my name on it, and they put the situation on their side, saying Ray was in the stadium screaming, trying to pick fights and stuff. When in reality, I was the only person in the whole place that was willing to help.
Ray, thanks for the phone call and sharing your story. There's been a debate nationwide about the use of police body cameras. I think Ray really highlights how a body camera perhaps could provide some transparency to his situation if police officers had body cameras on them. Miami-Dade County has been testing these cameras. Mayor Carlos Jimenez spoke with Here and Now on NPR, saying public record laws, though, in Florida need to be changed.
Anything that we produce, touch, et cetera, is a public record. And I don't think that's something that we need for these cameras. We should protect the privacy of our residents and only basically keep the records of those things that we need to keep, a felony, a crime, a confrontation, those things, yes, you keep. But, you know, going to somebody's home and then having images of somebody's home, et cetera, that, and they may be completely innocent, I don't think that's something that we want to really put out in the public.
Still some legal hurdles to overcome. Chuck Rabin with the Miami Herald. The rank and file on the street, though, have not exactly endorsed body cameras, have they?
Well, it's a tough thing. I mean, who's to say where you should use it and when you should use it, and what benefits does it have if it's the officer who decides when to turn the camera on? And it stuff has to be negotiated with the unions. I think it's got a long way to go before anything transpires with it.
How about from the state attorney's perspective? Would you like to have all those video files come in?
Absolutely, and not just the video, but the audio. Within the last couple of years, we've had a couple of investigations where at the end of the investigation, we didn't know what happened.
Well, we've seen other investigations. I mean, I'm thinking of the Gardner case in Staten Island where yes. video did exist
yes.
And it went to the grand jury and the grand jury decided not to indict. So in no way, shape or form does the existence of video presuppose a prosecution or a successful one.
That's correct. And again, you've always got to remember, though, we've still got to be bound by the law that is present. I don't know what the law is up there. I know what the law is in Florida. And again, going back to just some basic principles, if you've got a police officer who's attempting to make an arrest yeah. and a person resists arrest, the officer can lawfully use whatever force is necessary to take that person into custody. That's ugly sometimes because usually it involves taking somebody down to the ground and getting their hands behind their back. And depending on what or how the grand jury views that in terms of, okay, the police officer has a duty, or excuse me, has a right to do this, and he has the obligation to make the arrest if he so chooses, mm-hmm. then this was a consequence of the arrest, but was it intentional, and all those other issues.
Let's go back to the phones here on the Florida Roundup at 800-743-9576. Mitch is joining the program from Miami, from Coral Gables. Mitch, go ahead.
Hi. My question is specifically to the state attorney rep. I wanted to know, to what extent does the law protect individuals from discrimination from the police? If you look at some of the cases that have transpired recently, you'll see that the officer, or if it's Stuart Timmerman, describes the assailant as someone who is ferocious and large and they can't protect themselves. But at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, how true is that? If they're trained police officers, they're grown men, they can obviously protect themselves against someone who is unarmed. So to what extent are we actually evaluating the fact that there are people who think that black people are scarier than other people?
Prosecutor Horn?
I think most of us would probably agree that most of the law enforcement officers in our community and across the country are folks who go to work every day intending to do a good job. They are professional in the way they carry themselves. They're professional in their dealings with the citizens that they are sworn to protect and serve. However, I think we're smart enough to realize that every profession has got its bad eggs, and we realize that we've got some bad eggs in the police department. And sometimes officers abuse their position. They have a tremendous amount of discretion. And oftentimes, depending on what side of the bed they get up on or what your response is when they come into contact with you, determines whether you're going to have a good experience or a bad experience. As it relates to issues like bias and prejudice, it may be there. It may be hard to prove. But again, we don't have laws against that. That's more of something that would be resolved in a civil suit. Of course, every case that we're evaluating, we're making a credibility determination when the officer is giving the information.
Sure.
And sometimes we don't believe them and says, no, I don't believe that. We're not filing this case.
Go ahead, Chuck Rabin.
I
think the public also is having a tough time distinguishing between grand juries and actual trials. And Don may want to explain this a bit more. And so they're looking at like, obviously he was referring to the Michael Brown situation and, you know, the testimony there. There was no defense attorney representing or questioning you know, the people who gave their testimony in that situation.
Right. The difference of the strategy between going to a grand jury versus pressing charges and going for in front of a judge to make the case. Listen, we've got the phone lines are fulled up here. We've got plenty of conversation to go. We are going to continue this conversation. We've got to take a quick break here on the Florida Roundup. Still to come, we'll talk about the prosecution strategy behind going to a grand jury or pressing direct charges, and also talking about racial profiling, which has happened allegedly in South Florida in regards to police force and their treatment of the public. All that still to come here on the Florida Roundup on WLRN. We're back on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. We're talking about the scrutiny of police behavior in South Florida. Do you have experience as a police officer? Maybe you are in a law enforcement family. Do you have experience with law enforcement directly? Let us know and join the conversation here on the Florida Roundup at 1-800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. We're also online at WLRN.org and on Twitter at WLRN. We're speaking with Don Horn, Chief Assistant State Attorney in Miami-Dade County. Julie K. Brown covers crime and courts and prisons for the Miami Herald. She joins us from the Miami Herald newsroom in Doral. Don, we left talking about the prosecutorial strategy that's involved in police shootings, fatal shootings. In Ferguson, Missouri, it was a grand jury. In Staten Island, it was a grand jury. I'm not going to ask you about those cases because I know as a smart prosecutor, you're unlikely to comment on the work of another prosecutor of a case you didn't sit in front of. A case you did sit on, though, with the William Lozano case, the last successful prosecution of a Miami police officer involved in a fatal shooting. That conviction was overturned. That did not go through the grand jury route. That went straight to pressing charges and going for a pretrial conference and going through the court system that way.
Correct.
How does a prosecutor decide whether or not to go secretive, a grand jury, where defense is not present, versus pressing charges and going directly into a public courtroom?
All right, well, let me give some basic information first, because I believe in both Missouri and New York, they have a totally different system than we do. Every felony arrest that occurs in those jurisdictions are taken to the grand jury. In Florida, for the most part, the only thing that we're taking to the grand jury are first-degree murder cases, because we are legally obligated to do that. And as we explained to the members who get selected for the grand jury, the state of Florida doesn't want to give that much power to any one person to be able to charge someone with a crime that potentially could lead to the death penalty. So we are only legally obligated to go to the grand jury on first-degree murder cases. The charges against Officer Lozano were for two counts of manslaughter.
Right.
We didn't need to go to the grand jury for that. One of the issues and concerns that we have had in deciding what we do with some of these troubling police shootings is, do we take them to the grand jury? Because we're mindful of the fact that it is closed, it is secret. The transcripts won't be ordered or won't be transcribed unless there is a court order. So to the extent that the public does not get an opportunity to see, hear, evaluate, that's a problem. And so we have not taken them. The state attorney, Catherine Fernandez Rundle, has decided that we'll have a police shooting review committee. Myself and Jose Arojo, we are the co-chairs that she has appointed to that committee. We have other senior attorneys who have practiced for decades who are part of that committee. We review and evaluate, and Chuck, I'm sure, knows that we go into exhausting detail in setting out the information, and we feel that that helps us and helps the public
in
understand.
That process. Do you collect testimony? Do you hear testimony? Do you take depositions from witnesses?
In some cases, yes. As I said, we get the information.
And they're taking an oath and giving a deposition.
Oh, absolutely. As part of our investigation, we sometimes do additional statements on top of what the police have done. Sometimes we get the information and we're directing them. We need you to do this. We need you to talk to these people. We need you to get this information for us. Sometimes we do recreations of what happened so that we can kind of get an understanding. We've got the medical examiner coming to our office trying to explain positions of body. We got the medical examiner out at the scenes. And in fact, when the shootings themselves happen, we have got prosecutors who are on call 24/7 who are going out to that scene with the medical examiner, with the police officer, so we can see up close and personal from day one what's going on with that case.
Julie K. Brown with us from the Miami Herald. Julie, the system that Don maps out there does run the possibility of police officers being directed by prosecutors to investigate other police officers. You've covered law enforcement for some time. How is that generally greeted?
Well, the police officers have, as you know, they have a very strong Bill of Rights, and in a lot of cases it does protect them, and they don't have to give statements when they're accused of a crime until much later when they're forced to in court. So it impedes any kind of an investigation into police wrongdoing when you cannot really interview the person that was there and had witnessed it, being, you know, fellow police officers and the ones that you're looking at for potentially charging with a crime.
Tom, can I go ahead, Don?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because one of the things that we try to point out when we are talking to members of the community is if an officer has been involved in a shooting, let's say, and there's a death, and he or she potentially may end up getting charged with a crime, that officer is treated just like any other suspect or defendant.
Sure.
And all of the constitutional rights and privileges that you and I would have if we committed a crime are now given to that officer. And he has a right against incriminating himself, and he or she doesn't have to give a statement, right, which is the same right you have. It doesn't help us do our job, but those are the constitutional rights that all of us have as American citizens.
Let's go back to the phones here on the Florida Roundup, 800-743-9576. Bill is joining the conversation from Hollandale. Bill, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to put in a point of view from a family member of a family that is 100% police officers, my in-laws, and from the father to a brother-in-law to nieces and nephews, all the male members are active officers. And it was very eye-opening to me, not having ever been involved with the police community before, how much of the fraternity scope that these gentlemen have for each other and how far they're willing to go to protect each other. I personally have been pulled over several times. Mere mention of being a family member was enough to not be involved with anymore. Tickets or any more additional problems. And if you look at it from the recent news, when a state trooper pulled over an off-duty officer and his cruiser for doing 100 plus miles an hour, mm-hmm. It created a huge rift.
Yeah, that was a story going back a couple of years with one law enforcement officer from one district pulling over an off-duty officer from another district. But Bill, let me go back and just ask you real quick. What you're saying is your mere mention as family members in law enforcement has been enough to essentially get you off the hook of a police officer pulling you over for a potential traffic violation?
Yeah, potential traffic violations. I've never been anything deeper than that, but having been involved with that community, it's the extent to which the mentality of that whole internal fraternity would make it nearly impossible to correctly investigate and correctly charge an officer, and that's who's doing the investigating.
We got it, Bill. Thank you, and thank you for your family for their public service. I mean, there's no doubt about, Don, as you mentioned, the great majority of law enforcement officers not only get to work every day wanting to do the best job possible, they also want to get home at the end of the day safely to their families and friends. Absolutely.
Yes.
But Bill does bring up that point about, obviously, the process of officers having to investigate officers in these instances of fatal shootings or other possible infractions of civil rights or laws.
And I think Bill makes a very, very good point that's not lost on any of us. And even with the review I was making the other day of the Department of Justice report on the pattern or practices with the Cleveland Police Department, one of the things that they stated as a problem was that the law enforcement officers who do the investigations of the officers involved in the use of force publicly stated, yes, we try to put the officer in the best light. The public believes that already, and now it's been corroborated. One of the good things that's going to be happening here in Dade County, the state attorney had been pushing for years because of this sentiment from the community, that the law enforcement agencies try and get some other entity to come in to conduct their police investigations.
Right.
Finally, we are there knocking at the door. The MOU has been drafted.
The memorandum of understanding.
Has signed, exactly. The state attorney has signed. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement is now going to be conducting the investigations of police shootings by the Miami-Dade Police Department. The City of Miami Police Department has indicated they also want a similar MOU so that we're going to have another agency doing investigations of these going forward of the two largest police departments in Miami-Dade County.
Julie Brown, go ahead, because you've seen these problems with Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigating the Department of Corrections and the inmate deaths that you've detailed and documented in the Herald.
Yeah. Right now, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, quite frankly, has their hands full. They're getting every death investigation in every prison in the state right now, and there's an awful lot of them that the questions have been raised about them. I haven't heard anything about them adding any manpower, and we're seeing that these investigations are languishing. So I question whether the FDLE is capable of handling anything else right now. Unfortunately, I think that we're relying way too much on them, and they too are police officers, and they're part of the same fraternity. So I think people might argue that they're not exactly an objective body when it comes to police shootings.
Ought this to be the Department of Justice? We've seen calls for federal oversight, Julie Brown, in the case of Miami Gardens, and stories that, again, you've detailed about hundreds of arrests of customers and employees at one single convenience store. One guy stopped 258 times over 4 years. Prosecutors never went forward with the charges. Calls that there ought to be federal oversight for that department.
Yes, I think that's what the Obama administration, from what I'm hearing from people that are involved, the ACLU and the NAACP, they're talking to the Justice Department in Washington about Florida law enforcement issues. And I think that's what they're hoping is that the Justice Department will somehow figure out a way to have some better oversight over some of the law enforcement issues that we're facing here in Florida.
Don, you're on the inside here. Any conversation with the Department of Justice in regards to these other departments? We know the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, you want them to come into Miami-Dade County and the city of Miami. What about the feds?
I know the state attorney over the last couple of months have had direct conversations with Attorney General Holder, and they've talked about some of these issues. As it relates to the Department of Justice being the entity that's investigating police shootings, I think there's going to be a problem because jurisdiction-wise, we have state laws that we are evaluating to determine whether there's sufficient evidence. They have federal laws that primarily they're involved with.
But couldn't federal prosecutors abide by the state laws by just necessarily getting off the plane and stepping foot in Miami-Dade County?
They could.
Yeah.
But again, that's not what they're familiar with. And let me give you an example. Every police shooting memo that we close out and send out, we also send a copy to the local U.S. Attorney's Office for them to review, and they are making their own independent judgment of whether there are any federal charges that should be brought. Now, they've got a whole different group of charges than we do. We're looking, if you got a dead person, whether it's some level of homicide,
sure.
They're primarily looking to see if there's any type of civil rights violation. Of course, I don't even know what the elements are for that because that's not what I do. But I've got a specialty and expertise in what we do.
Right.
And again, we could get somebody to do that, but they're going to have to get up to speed. And then there's also going to be manpower to make sure we've got sufficient persons to do that also.
Yeah, Julie Brown, what do you think of that assessment, I suppose, of if there were a call and if there were an engagement on the part of the Department of Justice to look into police shootings here locally?
Well, obviously, I agree with the assessment that it would be a difficult, bridge to cross. I mean, there are different laws in the federal system versus the state system, but I don't think it's impossible. I think that given everything that's happening in our country right now and the outcry in surrounding some of these police incidents, I think that maybe it is a time that we start looking at whether it's more important to make sure that you know, jurisdictions stay within their jurisdictions, or whether we need some kind of crossover, quite frankly.
Julie Brown with the Miami Herald along with us here on the Florida Roundup. Don Horn is Chief Assistant State Attorney in Miami-Dade County. I'm Tom Hudson. Let's go back to the phones. Kevin is joining the conversation from Fort Lauderdale. Kevin, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I've been a police officer in South Florida for a number of years, and kind of going back to what was stated regarding using the officer's training, the admissibility of an officer's training regarding whenever that officer is facing potential prosecution. But at the same time, you hear officers give testimony and you read in their police reports and probable cause affidavits the key phrase, based upon my training and experience. So there seems to be maybe a double standard, maybe somebody could explain, of an officer's training not being able to be used against him or her, but at the same time, able to use that training and experience against a civilian facing prosecution.
Kevin, this is at the heart of the Lozano case 25 years ago. Don Horn, you continue to cite that case today and not in deciding to not go forward with certain prosecutions because the Third District Court of Appeals said you can't use officer training, but yet officers are putting citing the training in their narrative, in their police reports, clearly not just fatal cases, but other cases as well.
Absolutely. And as Kevin indicated, oftentimes certain areas of testimony that they are allowed to give at trial are based on their training and experience. But again, it's not just Dade County that has been impacted by that Lozano decision. There hadn't been charges filed in this state.
Yeah, that's a Third District Court decision.
And so other jurisdictions, other counties also are, in following that same law, being restricted on the same basis as we are. And again, the position, I believe, of the court is the jurors are not trying to find whether the officer is guilty or not guilty based on whether he violated the rules, policies, procedures, and guidelines of the police department. They have to make the determination of guilt or innocence based on the Florida statutes, and it does not have a training component.
Based upon the law. Kevin, you mentioned you're a law enforcement officer, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And are you, as part of your training, are you guided to use that phrase, based upon my training, in your write-up of certain reports?
You know, yes and no. I don't think that phrase particularly have been taught be it in an academy or something, but when you go through field training and you just kind of progress as an officer, you use that in reports because you've seen it in reports.
It's become de facto practice. Well, Kevin, thank you for your service. Be safe.
Thank you.
Kevin from Fort Lauderdale, law enforcement officer here. We will continue our conversation about police behavior in South Florida, the handling of that behavior by police and prosecutors. Your conversation is welcome at 800-743-9576. A couple of phone lines are open at 1-800-743-9576. Online, the discussion always open, WLRN.org, and on Twitter, use the handle at WLRN. More to come. We're back on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN talking about the scrutiny of police behavior in South Florida. Do you have experience as a police officer, a law enforcement family? What's your experience been with law enforcement in South Florida? Join the conversation 800-743-9576. Don Horn has been with us for the hour. He is Chief Assistant State Attorney in Miami-Dade County. I'm Tom Hudson, Julie K. Brown, covering crime and prisons for the Miami Herald, also along with us. Let's go right back to the phone lines. We've got plenty of phone calls. Mike is joining us from South Dade County in Homestead. Mike,
hey,
go
guys.
Ahead. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
I just got a comment. I live down here in South Florida, and I believe one of the main problems we have with the police officers and the law enforcement down here is most of the police officers that are coming on board nowadays, they don't even know what serve and protect means. They're out there with a badge. The first one to break the law are them. And my problem is this. When you have a kid, and that kid is seeing that police officer flying at 90 miles an hour in the Palmetto because he's late to get to court or whatever the reason is on the shoulder, and then they see another police officer that just don't respect the law, when that kid grows up, the respect for the police officer is going down the drain. And that is one of the problems we have down here in Florida. We are hiring police officers that either don't care or they're just there for the money or whatever the reason is, they could never become anything else other than maybe a police officer. And these kids are seeing these police officers breaking the law daily. And they grew up on that. And then their mentality is like, well, if he can do it, why can't I do it? And whenever he comes tells me I can't do it, I'm just going to tell him what the other kid, you know, this kid that got shot was like, what are you going to do about it?
Mike, we got it from Homestead. Thank you. I mean, the credibility, obviously, not only with children, but with the general public. Julie K. Braun with the Herald, you're still with us in Doral,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
You know, you've covered police officers for quite some time. I mean, there has to be a mutual respect. And, Don, I want to ask you that same question as well. That serve and protect, it is an oath. It is a solemn oath at that, to carry that badge and to stand behind that badge and to put yourself in harm's way for the public interest does require a great deal of respect for the public as well.
Yes, here's the issue. In Florida, I've covered a number of these police departments who hire officers from other who have been fired from other police departments, who have been accused of wrongdoing, and these officers just move from department to department where they can get a job. And, you know, we had an officer that we covered here, Bosquet. He worked for Opa-locka Police Department. He was arrested a number of times. He had a really long list of complaints that had been filed with the Florida Department law Enforcement's Criminal Justice and Standing Training Commission. And they just never really did anything about the fact that he kept getting in trouble. I mean, now he was charged with another crime and he is no longer a police officer, but it took years and years for them to get him off the street as a cop. And this is the issue. I mean, it also the problem rests with our elected officials who don't look at who they're hiring, don't look at who their chiefs are hiring, and don't do background checks.
Well, you know, and Don Horn, I imagine, you know, as a prosecutor, you get a case of any kind of case that involves the police. One of the first things you do, I would think, is going to pull the record of that officer. Take a look at what kind of behavior has this officer had on the streets prior.
We take a look at personnel files because we want to see whether there's a pattern, whether there's a history. It may not give us any evidence that we can use in court or assist in our evaluation of this specific incident, but it does give us a flavor of what we might be dealing with this particular officer.
So that's an important point. Why would it not give you any evidence that you could potentially use in court? If an officer is involved in, we're living this in real time with the unmarked squad car in Miami and in Wynwood hitting the street artist who then died a couple of days later from the injuries. His record is being scrutinized now.
And let's say that this incident that you just mentioned is an accident. Okay, so we've got a traffic accident, and now we look at his personnel file, and we see there may be some history of some other allegations of abuse. Does that mean this now was an intentional act as opposed to an accident? You see what I'm saying? So in most cases, with rare exceptions, the fact that somebody has engaged in inappropriate or even criminal behavior before, that's going to be inadmissible if I'm being tried, because the law says the jury, you need to determine guilt or innocence based on the evidence on this case. And you can't say, well, if he did something before, he must have done something again.
And to be clear, that is not a special right that law enforcement officers have in
Absolutely.
Court.
Absolutely. That's everybody.
That is a right that anybody accused of a crime has
in
court.
And there are special situations where we call it Williams rule here in Florida. If you've got enough particulars, you may be able to get some of that prior bad acts in. But I think the point that Julie makes is a good one, because if you've got police departments that have what we call an early warning system, I mean, how many abusive reports, how many complaints have been filed against you for abuse within the last 12 months? Maybe if it gets to a certain number, the department needs to kind of say, we need to take a look at this. Maybe you need to go to some counseling. Maybe you need to get some additional training. And if you've got an early warning system, maybe you can keep some of the cops who seem to have short fuses or who seem to always get in trouble from ending up doing something horrible.
Perhaps give them more training, as a matter of fact. Is there a law enforcement agency that you have experience with that has a best in practices early warning system?
We don't know. We don't oversee police departments.
I understand that, but you have experience on the inside dealing with these police departments.
They have their own internal workings. And in fact, we were describing the process earlier. You've got the incident, you've got the police investigation, you've got our investigation. Once we close out our investigation, the department then does its own internal investigation. We're not involved in that. So whatever Internal Affairs decides to do or what that department does with that officer based on the same thing that we may have closed out as a legally justified shooting,
right,
unless it ends up in the Herald or somewhere in the news, we have no idea what they've done or how they've dealt with that person because it's not relevant for our purposes.
And that's
quite frankly, I've seen a lot the situation in my reporting. What happens is these officers get accused of doing wrongdoing. We've had a number of very high-profile cases here in Florida, and the state attorney decides not to prosecute, refers it back to the individual police department to take some kind of administrative action, and they don't. They end up getting right back on the street because for one thing, the unions are pretty strong, mm-hmm. and as we already talked about, the fraternity is pretty strong, and it's very difficult to, even if you do suspend a police officer, for example, or try to even fire a police officer, they usually do end up getting their jobs back, or they end up going to another police department and getting another job.
That's Julie K. Brown with the Miami Herald. I want to thank her and Chuck Rabin from the Herald joining us earlier. Don Horn, Chief Assistant to State Attorney in Miami-Dade County. Don, thank you for your thoughts and your insights regarding police behavior and prosecutorial behavior for that
matter.
Thank
you for having me.
Thank you. And everybody, thanks wonderful for the phone calls. The conversation will continue online at WLRN.org. Look for the Florida Roundup online at WLRN.org. The program is produced by Alicia Zuckerman and Julia Duba. Our digital editor is Miriam Muriel. A South Florida Arts Beat with Ed Bell is next. I'm back on the Sunshine Economy Monday morning at 9. I'm Tom Hudson. Have a great weekend.